Hi, everyone. I'm Megan, and welcome to the season two finale of Word Crash, the game show where questionable plots compete for your vote to win a place in the Word Crash Hall of Infamy. Let's meet our contestants. First, a fan of all things written, she reviews books and explores literature on her YouTube channel, Made Between the Pages, live from Fukuoka. Please welcome Taylor.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Next, she's a game dev, Twitch streamer, and author who specializes in wholesome queer light novels. You got her start writing after a spat with Nintendo. Please welcome to the show, Alexandra Van Chestine.
Hi. So glad to be here.
Well, nothing left to do but get to it. Let's play Word Crash. Perspective is a funny thing, and today we're flipping everything upside down. It's the heroes you know and love, but they're the villain. Xandra, who's taking the dark path today?
Is it okay if I, like, pick a story I have a beef with?
Absolutely.
I want to turn around Big Hero 6. Are you both familiar with the movie?
Yes, I've seen the movie. That's all I've seen, but I think that's...
Okay, same.
Hopefully it's enough.
Same.
Okay.
That's
right.
Okay, because the comic books were really weird.
Really?
Yeah, the comic books don't have Baymax in them.
That seems, like, pretty important.
Yeah.
But I know. Big Hero 6 was the name of, like, this team book. It was almost like an X-Men book. I'm sorry. I digress. Who exactly is the villain, then?
Hero. And the great thing is, I don't even need to change that much of the movie. Because Hero, the protagonist, is...
Wait, no. I'm sorry. Hero protagonist, that's from Snow Crash.
Wrong, okay,
wrong movie already.
Okay, okay.
I'm kidding. Hero, I'm kidding. I'm sorry, Xandra.
Hero clearly yearns for something else. He is not fulfilled by his place in society, so it's not too much of a push. And of course, there's this whole tragedy that befalls him at the start, where his brother, like, dies in a terrible accident and stuff. It's not just that his brother did die in an accident. He was murdered. He doesn't go to the authorities. He doesn't go to his community. He says, no, I'm going to take care of it myself. You don't need to do a lot of work to spin that as, oh, a tragedy has befallen me. I will get my revenge. And he takes the legacy of his brother, like a literal healthcare robot, and turns him into a weapon. He goes to his brother's friends, who were all developing these, like, really cool bits of technology. And he is the one who actually gives them the direction to weaponize them. That's not something a hero does. He's like, hey, that's some really cool, like, bike stuff you're making, but you could make that into, like, blades and into something to make you go, like, really fast and cut stuff up. And hey, that's, like, really cool, like, chemical things you're making. You can turn them into chemical weapons on the fly. You only have to change a tiny little bit of his character, a little bit of nugget, or a little bit of how it's presented to have this be the character who, like, someone important was taken from me. So I was going to assemble a team of dangerous but very powerful people to get my revenge. Because this isn't the story. I'm even going to save a billionaire along the way to get my revenge. And that's not something a hero does in my book. I don't have to do a lot of work here.
No, you don't. I totally see that there is a knife's edge between hero and a young Lex Luthor.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Xandra, tell me about that minute in this story. What scene do we have that actually shows that we're going in this direction?
It all happens at that warehouse where he tracks, like, his little nano thing. And then finally, oh, wait, something bad is happening. I think that's, like, a great catalyst, because that's the point where, like, all this grief, all this pain I have in me, it's someone's fault. I get to turn all these feelings into a fire I can direct at someone. When you're thrust into, like, a dramatic event like that, yeah, you're trying to find meaning, because we're humans. We are the ones to give meaning to events and things that don't just have meaning by themselves. So to find a meaning that means, like, oh, okay, I don't have to grasp with this senseless accident, because that's really hard to do. I can instead put the blame on someone. Someone did this. You can really lose yourself into that.
I can definitely see that. Yeah.
Taylor, now that Hero is seeking revenge, we have to have kind of like a kick the cat moment for him.
Gotcha.
A what?
You've never heard of Kick the Cat?
No.
What it is, especially in short form like a movie, you need something that tells people that this is the villain. And of course, the comedic version of that is you have to make them kick a cat because nobody's going to like you once you kick the cat.
Yeah, I would say. In this world, I'm assuming we still have Baymax, right? Baymax is just a marshmallow, I would say. Mm-hmm. Hero's kick the cat moment would be when Baymax says, I don't want to hurt people. He says, this is not what I was built for. And Hero says, I don't care. You're going to do what I want you to do. And once you go for Baymax, the audience, the readers, are not going to like you anymore. Denying Baymax his true desire to help people would be his kick the cat moment, I would say.
Yeah. In the movie, I know at some point he like tries to like take away Baymax's chip or whatever that makes him help people because he's like overcome with emotion. But for him to say like, no, I don't care. Oh, man. Yeah, that's like that is striking.
As you said, Zandra, that's a fire that can really take over, right? So it's clear that at this point, the fire is out of control. Fire can burn things around it. So at this point, Hero can't control the fire of revenge, and it's taking over his relationships with other people.
I imagine it's really powerful when you have the character who's being set up as like, oh yeah, that's the young, plucky main character. Like, oh man, no.
I think recruitment goes very similar because he's charismatic, and so people aren't thinking much about this. We've got Baymax. No one expected Baymax to have a real personality. So it's possible that people don't notice the things that he's done to Baymax. Us readers are feeling horrible because this poor little robot wanted to help people, can't. So when that battle comes, what's different? Because I think that's our opportunity to really show that Hero has gone off the deep end.
I don't know how the battle would go differently, but where the movie always relies on Hero to do everything and just be the spark for almost every single situation, there should be a point where the rest of the team come together they take the initiative and they go, hey, Hero's gone to a bad place. We need to come together and fix this. And it's interesting to have like Hero and his brother's old friends caught in a tug of war over Baymax. I think that would be like a really interesting set piece.
Maybe up until this point, like Megan said, the friends don't know what he's done to Baymax. They still think that he wants to get revenge on this one person, but they don't know that his fire of revenge, to use our previous, you know, imagery, has burned out of control. Maybe they have won and they get revenge, whatever that means. I mean, if we're keeping kids level, maybe they don't murder the person, but
yeah, they probably just stop the bad guy with his like big nanite swarm.
Right, right. And then they assume it's going to stop. But then we take a good character arc of what Game of Thrones got wrong with Daenerys. And he actually decides, oh, I'm not done. And he wants to continue his revenge.
Yeah.
That's when the friends realize, wait a minute. So the twist is that you get that big battle. They do win. But then the actual hero becomes the villain in that moment because he's not ready to stop.
Oh, man, that would be such a powerful moment.
Yeah.
You get the feeling, okay, all right, good. He was able to keep a lid on it. It's fine. The audience was like kind of like stressed out about, oh, man, is hero okay? Okay, no, we're okay. Good. Victory. Why isn't the scene over? Oh, no. Why is the camera lingering? Oh, no. And then it just keeps going. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I can't remember from the original movie. I think they destroy the nanite swarm, not control it.
I think so, because I think it was like the professor in his bid to put together like the wormhole to throw the billionaire into. And there's stuff that happens in the wormhole. Basically, like part of that fight created a bigger problem that everyone needs to deal with.
What if Hero got control of the nanite swarm? Has control of the nanite swarm. Doesn't need to tell Baymax what to do. And he goes after the billionaire. Everyone's like, oh, it's done. And then up it comes behind the billionaire. And you think it's going to consume both of them. And it just slams down on the billionaire and picks him up. Right?
Yeah.
And you hear, as he goes flying.
Yeah, and everyone's eyes get big. You know, they're like, what is going on? Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. Stuff hits the fan.
I wonder if there's a point where, like, Hero discards Baymax, or if it's the other team able to get to Baymax's heart or something, and, oh, can, like, tip things.
This is where we get to who's going to be the real hero. We have a villain. We have his arc. We need someone to step up at the end and be the person who makes everything right. Well, right enough. And I love, Xandra, what you're saying about somebody resets Baymax. Mm-hmm. So that he's capable again of doing something.
I love the concept of like the village, the community. So there's something special in my heart about like, oh, what if it's all of heroes like brothers, friends? They as a whole, they come together like Captain Planet style. Yeah, by our powers combined.
Mm-hmm. You're thinking of a scene where every one of the friends uses some power to move this forward, to get somebody right there, to plug something back into Baymax.
Oh, yeah.
That would be cool. That would be really cool.
They can all use their different like skills and abilities to like, okay, one of them pins them, one of them opens up the thing, one of them gets like the copies the USB drive or whatever.
Yeah, I like that.
I don't think any of this stops the wormhole from opening.
You gotta have a wormhole.
I don't know if this movie has time for a redemption arc, but would you consider Hero being tossed through the wormhole to be an end? He gets tossed through the wormhole. And in Baymax, instead of saving him, has got to be the one that pushes him through the wormhole.
Baymax has a moment where he has to decide who he's going to help, this one person or the greater good. I like the idea of being pushed in the wormhole because it's kind of like in fantasy movies where someone falls into water. You don't see a body. So that could open it up for Hero to come back later, you know, sequel material possible.
Say for a second he gets lost. Baymax pushes Hero through the wormhole because the nanites aren't gone. They're under his control. He is super dangerous. And Baymax knows how dangerous it is because he got disabled. He knows there's something wrong. I need to take care of you. Stinger would have been after everything's done and everybody thinks Hero's lost in space somewhere with Baymax on the other side of that wormhole. You see them on a planet. Hero just like, humph. And Baymax doing the therapy thing.
Oh!
I like that.
We need to talk about your feelings. You are feeling upset. Oh, he throws a rock or something, right?
Yeah,
that's,
you know what?
So
I
good.
Love that. I love that.
Oh.
Yes, 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 yes.
Yes!
You know, he gets to scream into a pillow for a while. That's perfect. I vote for that one.
Yep, yep.
All right, you two have to decide, though, what happens to the billionaire?
Well, we can't forget about the team. They're kind of the heroes here, right? So maybe the billionaire gets thrown in the water, and then the next time we see him, he's surrounded by the team shaking their fingers at him. Don't you do that again, kind of thing. And then if we want to have a community center opening, we can have the nanobots doing the construction. The billionaire's power is repurposed to help the community.
Oh, yeah. Dang, you could really do a lot of good work with that sort of stuff.
Yeah. The team uses their science knowledge to reprogram the nanobots, and they're able to build a community center. If we want to plant a seed for this earlier, we could say that this was a hero's brother's dream, was to have like a community center where he could spread the love of science to other people, and then through his friends, it actually comes true.
Ah, his legacy lives on through his friends. Ah, that's really good.
And that is Big Hero 6. But Hero's the villain.
I'd watch that. I would absolutely watch
too.
That. Hey, whoever's watching that's a filmmaker, make that.
Now it's time for Industry, where we talk to our contestants about one special fact people need to know about what they're involved in. Taylor, what have you got for us today?
I'd like to talk about making YouTube videos, or more specifically, the BookTube world, which is where I'm from. It's a very small section of YouTube. But what I wanted to put out there for people to know is YouTube is usually seen as something you watch, not necessarily something you engage with. Maybe you watch the video and then you move on to the next one. But something I wanted to put out there is we want to hear what you have to say, especially on BookTube. So if you're watching a BookTube video, you can assume that person has put lots of hours and time into reading the book and making the content. And we love when you comment. I wanted to make sure I put out there that when you're watching, I can only speak for BookTube, but when you're watching a BookTube video and you're not sure if it's worth it to comment or engage with the video, I just want you to know that we love it when you do that. That's why we do what we do, is that engagement. And even if it's just a quick, you know, like, hey, like the video or whatever, it doesn't have to be complimentary, but I'm just saying that engagement is why people do what they do on YouTube. So don't be shy, you know, comment, let us know what you think. I think I can speak for most of BookTube when I say that we love that.
And that's what YouTube wants. It wants engagement. Mm-hmm. At the end of Word Crash, I say, if you're listening on YouTube, remember to like and subscribe, because that's what you have to do. Yeah. People who don't like people saying those things in their streams are like, why does everybody have to say this? Because YouTube requires you to say it. Like, yeah. No one will watch your videos if you don't say it. Mm-hmm. And YouTube has always counted the downvote button as engagement, which is terrible, but that's what they did. And that's why now you can't see the counts for downvotes anymore. Right. They don't care if you like it or hate it. As long as people are watching it and they can put their advertisement on it, they're fine.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, and I think, you know, the engagement, of course, YouTube requires it. But also, that is the motivation that keeps us going. Because, you know, I don't know if people know this, but most people on YouTube, especially BookTube, do not make money. And if they do, it's pennies. Because, like I said, BookTube is very small. So the reason we do what we do is because we love it. And so when other people comment on what you love, that keeps you going.
I'd like to also say that I have never made a dime on Word Crash yet.
Liking, subscribing, commenting, super important. Anyone who's listening, if you're ever prompted by whatever platform you are to give a star rating of 1 to 5 stars, only 5 stars matters. No other rating matters at all. It's 5 stars or nothing. We are unfortunately like past the point where we can just tip according to the quality of service, or we can accurately rate something. We are caught in like a system that's basically only rewards the best. So if you really like this book, or you really like this video or anything, and you want to like, oh, this was cool, like I want to give it a review or something, only the 5-star reviews ever even like sometimes get counted.
5 stars is the upvote.
Yep, exactly.
I think what's really crazy is that this is kind of the really cruddier version of what's called a net promoter score. I don't know if either of you are familiar with the idea of a net promoter score.
No.
So a net promoter score is actually a well thought out application. I mean, it's not perfect, right? But you probably answered these questions before. They're the, on a scale of 1 to 10, how likely are you to recommend this service to your friends? That's what they're doing. They're grabbing that 1 to 10 to do a net promoter score. 9 and 10 are the only ones that count for, yes, I like this. And then you have 1 and 2s that subtract. So you've got the 9 and 10s that add and the 0s and 1s that subtract and everyone else in the middle, meh, right? So your net promoter score, you put those together. And I'm probably getting the math wrong. Correct me in the comments, please. Tell me I'm bad at math in the comments. That's fine.
It's the same as like video game reviews. 10 is perfect. 9 is really good. 8 is all right, 7 is meh, and the 6 other numbers below that are like, this is garbage. I have a problem with the 10-point scale, but also specifically with this.
Well, the thing is, though, especially in the U.S., think about that as grades.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If you get a 50%, you have failed your class. So 60 is a D, 70 is a C. It's almost like grades, which we know are unfair and don't really work well. I think a net promoter score would be much better for any platform to implement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Much better than 5 stars or no stars.
I at least appreciate when it's just like, I was better off after engaging with this than before. I want to press a button to that effect.
Here yeah, I like that. I need to put that out into the world.
Keep it simple.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay, Zandra, what industry are you going to talk about today?
I have a lot of them. I think I could probably share something that's from writing or streaming or game dev, and it's that tools help, but they don't matter that much, and there's probably a cheaper tool for what you want to do. If you're illustrating or making covers or something for like your book or anything, there are extremely cheaper alternatives to Photoshop. If you're making games, there's so many ways to make video games right now that's like practically free, and that you don't even like need to know code. You can just start making a game just with menus and stuff, and a bunch of like pre-made assets. In streaming, the most used piece of software for streaming is free, is open source, community made. And usually all it takes is like a webcam. And here's the thing, like the most popular streamers don't have the best layouts or the best cameras.
Right.
They often just have like video and a camera and that's it. And maybe a little timer if they're a speedrunner. Doing the thing is more important than getting the best gear. The best gear might actually make a difference later. But at first, no gear compares to the experience of making a bunch of things. That's why I love making like novels, because they're short and I can make a few. I'm working on my 7th book. And I started doing this like less than 5 years ago. There's no equivalent to the experience you get from finishing something.
Yeah.
So making small things with cheap tools gets you that very valuable experience very, very quickly. And after that, you can start eventually like working on getting better tools. And by then, you know what you need. You know what you're working for.
I definitely agree with that, because you have to get those reps in. When I first started making videos, I used my phone in a corner, you know, and it was terrible quality. Once you do that, it's like it breaks the dam. You've started. And my editing was horrendous, but you know what? I did it. And actually, when Megan came on my channel and we did an interview, we were talking about how a lot of us want perfection from the beginning, from ourselves. We don't expect it from other people, but we want it from the beginning. And that keeps you from trying new things so often. And we were talking about how you just have to do it, even if it's privately. You just have to try it. I want to normalize, you know that phrase, let's normalize. I want to normalize not being good at something.
Yes. Oh, man, that's so important.
And I want to normalize it for myself, too, because there's a constant imposter syndrome, I think, that a lot of us deal with, where we're always trying to be as good as our last project. So I definitely agree that getting those reps and just trying it out and not being good at something for a little while is really important.
Absolutely. Gosh, it's so important.
That comes back to the grade things that Megan mentioned, too, because like if you're told 70% is bad, well, then it's like, well, this video is only 70% good, so why would I put this out there? It all fits together, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So I want to say two things. One, the practice is important, and I think the light novel is a really interesting idea, because back when I was doing a lot of agile software development training, we used to talk about the idea of failing fast.
Yes. Yes. Oh, yeah.
Now, what constitutes a light novel, Zandra?
The definition changes a lot depending on where you are, because word count is very different between like Japanese and, for example, English or French. My understanding, it's shorter than a novel. It usually has full page illustrations every now and then. And it has become somewhat of a trope for a lot of them to tend to be like light reading, like lighthearted. And also there's been this like recurring trope where they often have these very long titles that just also give the elevator pitch of the book. I don't think these are hard and fast rules, and I've like embraced them myself a whole lot. But shorter than a novel usually has illustrations, and the rest is like just, I think it's more tropey or flavored, or like it depends on who you're asking. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes complete sense.
So I get the feeling that a light novel is like less than 200 pages, maybe like 150 pages. And that seems to me like the perfect size to fail fast. You're going to write something and you're going to fail. And whatever, you didn't invest a whole bunch, you can move on to the next thing. But if you do, you go through that entire process of actually publishing it, which is fantastic practice for the things most writers don't do. Most writers don't finish.
I was a bit of a loss as to what to do at one point, because I knew I was wanted to write, but making comics was too daunting. And a friend of mine, Talon Lee, suggested, have you heard of these things called light novels? And that was the thing. We're like, oh, man, if I go approach an artist and say, hey, you want to draw my comic? They will run away. But if I say like, hey, can I pay you to draw 8 things? That is way more approachable. And like writing a small book, okay, cool. That's not like a multi-novel epic. That's just like a 10, 15, 20, 25K words or something in English. That's doable. That's approachable. And also it means commissioning an editor to handle that will also be like a small fee compared to like a big thing. It all makes it like easy to do. I mean, the first one I just made in 2 weeks. I just hurriedly like drew it in a style I could pull off and then just put the whole thing online. And that was a great experience. You learn so much by finishing something, even if it's garbage.
Break out your thesaurus and grab your red pen because it's time for Drop It. In this game, we ask our contestant to drop a single letter from the title of a book or movie and tell us what the new plot is. Taylor, what letter is getting the axe today?
Today, we are going to be dropping the letter H from what is the title of both a movie and a book, and that is Howl's Moving Castle. We're going to cut the H, and we're going to have Owl's Moving Castle. I was inspired by the recent surge in cozy fantasy that's been coming up in the book world, where, you know, there's not lots of heads being chopped off. It's more cozy world. So I thought, what is associated with an owl? Books, a library. In this story, we have a moving library that can go all around the world. And if you're lucky enough to find it, maybe the owls inside will let you in. Not only do we have a big owl who is the head of this place, you also have little ones who are mischievous, little characters that maybe cause issues here and there within the moving castle.
Ooh, this is fantastic. I like this. It's like, how could you make Howl's Moving Castle any more sweet? I mean, it's not the best place in the world, but still, it's a very charming tale, and you've just made it more charming. Incredibly.
That was the goal.
Incredibly. You've squeaky cleaned, rebooted something that was already pretty clean and wholesome.
Who doesn't want to just run away and go into a library?
I wasn't sure with this book whether the main character would be the owl, or an owl, maybe an apprentice owl or something, or someone outside the castle trying to come to the castle. Because there are two perspectives you could have, someone visiting or trying to find it, or the life within the castle.
I really appreciated how in Howl's Moving Castle, there's not a lot of people in the castle, but there's a dynamic there. And we get to see the perspective of someone who's been thrust in a strange situation. And I was wondering, did someone go like, no, I've had it. Okay, I just can't stand it. I'm running away to be a book owl. And this human child comes in like, yeah, I want to be an owl. And the owls go, that's not how that works. But sure, circumstances here will show you how things work here. And like, maybe it'll dissuade you from sticking around or just have a like outsider thrusting themselves into this world and getting introduced to like all this like fantastic place. But there's being like a mismatch of where they come from. That's usually very charming in these stories.
I would say if we're going with the runaway situation, our protagonist would be said runaway. And then we could introduce kind of a sidekick character, the really quirky little owl that doesn't get along with the other owls or something. And they become friends. And the little quirky owl, I imagine like a, you know, those, do you know what the ones I'm talking about? The tiny little ones that like jump. I don't know what type of owl that is.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
Yeah, so maybe they become friends and the little owl is the one guiding the protagonist as to how it works in there.
Now, question, do the owls talk? We need to establish anytime there's animals, I'm like, do they talk?
I would say in this case, they would have to.
Okay. Fantastic. Xandra, name the runaway.
Chris. It's got lots of potential.
Name the owl, Taylor. The little Tweety owl, Hootie owl. Don't name them Hootie.
Toto. I think that's cute. Toto.
Toto. Chris and Toto.
That kind of works.
So Chris and Toto have become fast friends and are running around on the owl's moving castle. Now describe to me this castle.
Organized chaos. It's not neatly organized, but the owls know where everything is. Kind of like me when I was in high school, my mom said, clean your room. And I was like, it is clean because I know everything is. Like, that's the vibes I have. You wouldn't be able to find the book you wanted without help from an owl, but they know where everything is.
You're making me feel like there are stacks of books and papers and maybe some very arcane filing systems that are perfect for like a beak to go through. Not built for thumbs at all.
Have these like marks at the very top of the spine where the owl's just like, pick up the books from the top of the spine.
Oh, I like that.
An extra bit of leather with a little rope on the end.
Oh, yeah.
They just put it through their beak and fly it over to people.
Also, towering bookshelves because they can fly. Super tall bookshelves.
Yes. Yeah. No ladders here.
I like it.
This could be intimidating. I could see large shadows being cast from some of these tall piles of books. And it has to be very sturdy to hold all the books, so there's probably stonework to go along with all this. And if the owls are running around in there, or I'm sorry, if the owls are flying around in there, there's probably not a lot of stairs.
Yeah.
So this is definitely an opportunity for Toto to grab Chris and bring them places.
Yep. Mm.
They really are in it together.
Yeah. Mm. But Toto's small, right?
Yeah, Toto's small, but big enough to still carry Chris or not.
If you want a supporting character, maybe there's an owl who's such a big human fan. Like, oh my gosh, a human. I've read all about you. Yes. Wow, wait, your hair is nothing like it's supposed to be in the books. Is that real? Are you okay? Maybe a little bit of comic relief turned on its head, but it comes with their own motivation to, like, help them.
Taylor, what's this character's name? This super helpful character.
The super helpful character. What's the first thing that comes to my head? I have forgotten words.
When all else fails, name them after food.
Okay. If we're going to go with the Japanese feel like Toto, we could go with Mochi.
Mochi. Very much a fan of humans. Really willing to help. What's their flaw? To me, it's feeling like they have no idea what they're doing and they're the most inept owl ever.
It feels like they're extremely book smart, but have zero practical knowledge. That kind of character who goes like, ah, I've read about this. This is how it works. Therefore, if I do this, that will happen. And then it doesn't because the real world has its own like sets of laws and principles and stuff. But they basically, oh yes, I've read about this. I know how this works, but it's not like that.
And Toto has all the smarts, but can't bring anybody anywhere. We've got the big one, and we got the little one.
Chris came to mind. I was looking for a rather neutral name. Like, what's your gender? Owl, please.
Like, owl, just... please. Fantastic. So it never comes up. They're just always Chris, and it never comes up.
They have to be sneaky, because they did run away after all. They did manage to find this castle and gain entry.
The sneaky one, the strong one, and the smart one. Now, where's Chris trying to go? Is there one book? Is there one section of books? What's the overall goal?
Well, it sounds like the overall goal, if we're keeping with the wholesome vibes, is for Chris to find themselves. Chris doesn't know really what they're looking for. I'm kind of biased towards, I love sitting with characters and like cleaning scenes, you know, in Howl's Moving Castle where she cleans everything, Sophie cleans everything. I love that type of stuff where everyday things have significance. So in my head, I didn't have like, they want to find this particular book, but more the experience of being there and learning how to be there helps, in this case, Chris, figure themselves out.
You are absolutely correct. This is something that I struggle with. I write high adventure. Mm. And so I always assume that there should be some high adventure going on. But Howl's Moving Castle is only kind of like that anyways. Mm-hmm. It's just a bunch of stuff that happened to people and a lot of discovery about those people. So let's lean into that. Let's say that the three of these people together now have to do some mundane job. What mundane job are these three tasked with completing?
Chris's whole thing is, I want to be like an owl in Book Castle. Yes. And maybe there's some sort of test or rite of passage. Maybe the head owl goes, this is ridiculous, but I don't want to be a jerk about it. Here's a list of impossible goals. And if you like learn enough to accomplish it, then cool. Yes, you will be part. And then, okay, the person will just get discouraged and leave, and then problem over. But of course, it's a story, so they're gonna give it their all. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but that's kind of like what comes up to me.
I love that.
We need something very specific.
Okay.
Some mundane task that would absolutely need to be done with a bunch of owls around that the owls are like, oh yeah, nobody wants to do this. Make the new owl do it.
I see. I would say maybe they have like an archive section with all the old books and they haven't been reorganized in ages and no one wants to touch them. And they're just like, that's going to be a long process. I don't want to do that. So they say, okay, I want you to go, maybe we could say it's like at the top or something, at the top of the castle. I want you to go up to the tippy top shelves with all the old books and reorganize them and clean them up and make sure that they're accessible for the future.
Is it like, is it getting into like the nooks and crannies, maybe all books that fell behind the shelves or stuff that's misfiled or...
And they have to learn the filing system to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I love the idea of like a very small human being able to fit into places that the owls can't.
Mm-hmm.
And so Chris is actually successful at finding some of these lost books.
I love that. Lost books. That's it. You have to find all the lost books. Mm-hmm. That's
it. Yeah.
And because opposable thumbs, they could get some. The owls can't. Yeah.
And they can squeeze through small things that, my fragile feathers might not get in, but Chris, I'm just like, get in there.
Perfect.
And after a hard day of finding lost books, I'm imagining there's a cute, cuddly scene of the three of them sleeping on a pile of paper in a nest. What do people want?
They gotta have cushions. They have so many extra feathers. They gotta be using them.
Oh, yeah, I like that. Okay. Cushions. And that's something, I'm glad you asked that, because, you often picture owls either in a tree by themselves or in like a large, like, owlry. But I feel like a large owlry doesn't fit the vibes of this. I feel like they have to have individual little pockets where they all sleep. Maybe the cuddle scene would be Mochi has a place that's big enough for Chris. And up until this point, Toto's been sleeping by themselves. And so Mochi says, hey, Toto, why don't you come here? And that's a big deal for Toto because he doesn't fit in. And so then he gets to come to Mochi's little cubbyhole. And then they all fall asleep.
But Mochi has all like the human posters.
Yeah, I like that.
Okay, Zandra, now that you brought it up, what kind of human poster are they going to have?
Like the Jonas Brothers or something?
Anything human. So you have these wild mishmash of styles. You have some Art Nouveau stuff. You have just a product advertisement. But for Mochi, it's like, no, like, this is all human memorabilia. This is all perfect. This is exactly what I want.
And this is a human with no hair who wears this white shirt all the time. Can you imagine wearing white all the time?
Yeah, clothes would be like an obsession for Mochi, right? Because owls don't wear clothes. So,
oh, yeah.
Like, that would be something really interesting for Mochi. Why do you choose the colors that you do? Like, why do you change it all the time? That would be really cute.
So it's a hassle to, like, accessorize, but you get to change it, and maybe Mochi's why, like, some of the owls wear hats or something.
Well, I was about to say, it'd be amazing if Chris tied, like, a cravat around Mochi's neck.
Oh, yeah.
Right? A nice little scarf or something.
Yeah.
And Mochi's all like, I have clothes! I have clothes!
I love that.
I will be the belle of the ball. I don't know what a belle or a ball is, but I will be it.
Oh, I love
I don't know
that.
Why this ball has a bell on it, but my gosh, they're popular.
What's mealtime like?
Please don't say mice.
I'm sorry. You know what? That got dark. That got dark. We don't have to go there at all. I'm sorry.
I'm trying not to address the elephant in the room as a really big fan of mice.
Maybe when you become part of this owl order that takes care of the books, you give up mice because mice will chew on the books, so they don't want any mice around.
Maybe there's some trees as part of the castle. Maybe there's some fruit trees in there.
The owls only eat the fruit of a particular tree, and that's why they live long enough to take care of the books.
A special tree that grows on the castle.
It's the fruit of knowledge. No, it says here this is a peach. No, it's the fruit of knowledge.
We've got to take this warm tale of friendship and found family and bring it to some kind of conclusion. Because the question is, does Chris become an owl? Not an owl, but an honorary owl.
For me, if we're doing the self-discovery thing, I would have viewed the castle as a place for Chris to find themselves. And then maybe the castle's kind of served its purpose for Chris. I view it as like leaving the nest. Maybe Chris decides to leave the nest.
I'm finding some like interesting like parallels when it comes to finding my community as someone who discovered her own like neurodivergent parts. Oh, this character is like finding their peers that are very unlike them, but they can find a sense of community. I feel there's probably an ending where like Chris gets to stay. Oh, maybe there's some like strife between the Owl Castle and the actual human cities around, and maybe like Chris can help the shaking of hands to like, oh, like be a bridge between humans and owls.
I like that, the ambassador role.
Mm-hmm. I like them not leaving too, because sometimes it gets taught by a lot of different shows. It's like they find this fantastic place, but then they go home. It was fun to have that fantasy, and you'll always have this in your heart. But in the end, you have to go home, and you have to face that the world is the way it is. When lots of us, in many different ways, we move away, and we find new people, and we live happily ever after.
Well, you're talking to someone who moved across the world, so.
You know exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. I found my husband here. I'm literally across the world now, so. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
So Chris becomes the ambassador. We need this final scene that kind of lets everyone know what the real job of that ambassador is.
Maybe the castle goes to a new town. There's like a little kid who sees the castle and comes up and is looking for an adventure book or something, like something to escape from their life. They also want to run away for some reason. And maybe the ending scene could be Chris saying, yeah, come on, I'll get you your book. And then, you know, so it's like passing it on.
The child is looking up and there's the silhouette of an owl. Light shifts. Oh, it's like Chris in like a cloak.
That'd be cute. Could Howl's Moving Castle be more wholesome? Yes, it can. I want someone to write this book now. I think it would be a hit.
Before we go, it's time to give our contestants a chance to tell us what's new and exciting in their lives. Taylor, what's new and exciting in your life?
Well, I am staying quite busy with my BookTube channel, Made Between the Pages. I have been uploading, editing a lot of content for that recently. I also am an assistant editor at Before We Go blog, which is a sci-fi fantasy blog where we post interviews with authors and book reviews. You can always check out my reviews there as well. Sometimes I post content about my life in Japan on my channel as well, so you can go there for life vlogs, book things. I also do author interviews. We have a podcast that I'm also a host of. I have a couple other co-hosts as well where we interview authors, and Megan has graced the stage for that, called Page Chewing. So you can find that on my channel as well as my co-host channel, Steve Talks Books. So yeah, I got a lot of book stuff going on, pretty much.
Well, I would just like to congratulate you here at the end, being someone who actually isn't an author, coming on here and taking the chance. I really appreciate you coming out here today. You've made a lot of fantastic contributions, and maybe this will inspire you to put some of those words down in the future. I think maybe you can do more than review books.
Yeah, you know, Owl's Moving Castle, coming to you soon. And thank you. You know, I mentioned before I came on here that I had taken a foray into improv before, and it was not my forte. But I really wanted to give this a shot because I thought, why not, you know? We talked about being bad at something, right? And just trying it. So yeah. I decided to channel that myself. And this was wonderful. It was so much fun. So thanks for having me.
No problem. It was great. Now, where can people find you on the internet?
My YouTube channel, of course, Made Between the Pages. I also am on Twitter. You can find the link to my Twitter, my Instagram, and a couple other things below my videos. Those are underneath every video. My Instagram, you can feel free to follow it, but it's not bookish. So if that's the content you're looking for, maybe Twitter or my YouTube is best.
Fantastic. And what videos should people be looking forward to?
I actually do a yokai and folklore series on my channel where I talk about different yokai and Japanese folklore and mythology. I have about 5 of those out so far. They take a little while to make, but I finally have one coming out soon. I'm going to be talking about kappas. I always talk about the yokai, and then I talk about how that connects to life in Japan. My husband is Japanese, so I get kind of on the ground knowledge of how people interact with that yokai or that story today. That is coming out. I also am planning another BookTube bartender series where I make cocktails for characters. Those also take a while to make, but thankfully, I have both of those coming out soon, so you can look forward to those. And I have a big wrap-up coming out soon where I read only self-pub and indie this month. So I'll be doing a bunch of reviews and shout-outs for some of those books coming up soon as well.
That sounds super exciting. I personally know people who would be thrilled to watch Japanese folklore and yokai content. So that'd be fantastic.
Thanks. I love making them. They're on my channel. They're in a playlist. So you can actually see the... We were talking about how my original videos were not the highest quality. You can see it develop over the years. You know, if you watch from the first one to the most recent one, feel free. Check them out. And leave a comment, because I'd love to talk to you.
I will like, comment, and subscribe.
Thanks for saying it for me.
I really love yokai and folklore stuff. I just started learning how to make drinks. I also like love indies. Like, yes. Okay, yes. I need to check this out.
Zandra, before you get on to what's new and exciting in your life, I teased something in your intro about a spat with Nintendo. Can you tell our listeners what that spat with Nintendo was and maybe, you know, how it affected you?
Okay, I used to be like primarily a game designer. I've been making games for like 25 years, give or take, since I was a teenager. And I eventually finally made it into the industry proper. I've been like doing like everything under the sun, like graphic design, translation, stuff like that. Finally, like, this is my calling, making video games. Yes, perfect. And throughout that process, I also went indie, moved to like Montreal, and I was like talking with my friend Talon and also like just trying to figure out, okay, games are great. I want to do a little bit something more with like stories and stuff. So that I'm introduced to the concept of like novels. And I really stuck on the concept of like silly light novel covers, because I figured, man, I can't write a whole book, but I can make a neat cover with a long title, especially since a lot of them had like extremely silly like trans themes. I was developing as an artist. I'll just make fake light novel covers as a gag, as a thing, just silly and fun to do. And then a friend got me the game Splatoon 2 for the Switch, and I started playing it, and they let you make these little like postcards you could draw to put like to pin to your character, and people would see them. People would just like write cute messages, and some of them were getting like really elaborate. So I decided, hey, I'm gonna make a fake light novel cover in Splatoon 2 as my little calling card. Because my friends were talking about, like, oh, when are we going to get, like, maid uniforms for our squids? Like, yes, okay, so I made, like, a fake light novel cover about, like, squid maids. Like, I asked for squid maids, but I never thought I'd become one. And, like, I made, like, a little flustered, like, squid maid character. And, like, made a book by Alexandra. And then I was, like, really proud of it. And then, like, a few days later, I got a notice in the mail. Content has been removed for violation. You cannot advertise your book on Splatoon 2. Your content has been deleted. Don't do this again. And I was like, what? This was clearly a joke, right? Who would advertise their book on Splatoon? I really like that picture too. So I was like really angry that they just deleted it. It's like, you know what? Fine. I'll prove you right. I'll make the book. So in 2 weeks, out of pure spite, I just wrote a light novel about squid maids and like drew illustrations in the like very like black and white pixel art style that like were on the postcards in Splatoon 2. I put the whole thing together, printed it at my local print shop, and put it online. And when I was like going to like video game conventions and stuff, people would ask me for it. And it got like, this was like probably the most popular thing I did at the time. My Patreon, which was for me as like someone who was doing all sorts of stuff like game dev and art and stuff, I gave it to like my like backers and my patrons, and like shoop, overnight my Patreon shot up, and I was like, oh wait, this actually might be a thing. So, and this was, honestly, it was really fun to do. So I decided, okay, I maybe I can make another one where I'm like actually like making up everything, not based on a video game, just I invent the whole thing. And then I did, and then that one worked even better, and now I'm working on my 7th book. And that's what I do now. I'm a light novel author. All because I got really angry at Nintendo that one time. Now this is what I do.
Best origin story. Best. Yep. Just out of spite.
Just out of spite. And then that spark of spite lit a fire in me. But like more positive energy has been like keeping going. And now my 6th book is way better than my first one. But yeah, that's the great thing. I've been making a bunch of them. I made like 3 in 1 year. And I learned how to like run self-publishing Kickstarters for mm-hmm. print cost. I ran 3 Kickstarters in 1 year. I was like very exhausted. But I was learning a bunch at a time. And now it's amazing what you can do when you're angry enough, it turns out.
I completely agree. One of the things that sparked me writing my book was, in fact, reading somebody else's book and being so upset by the ending. I'm like, I can do better. And so I wrote my book.
Yeah.
I don't know if I did do better. That's for somebody else to decide and get mad about, I guess. Well, now that we know where you came from, Zandra, what are you doing now and what's exciting in your life?
I'm currently working on my 7th book. It's a short story collection as a sequel to my first, like, original light novel. My friends and I were granted 3 wishes by a cat goddess, and I swear I got distracted when my turn came around. Or cat wishes, for short. I just love writing about these characters. After that, I'm going to be continuing my series about, like, modern witches called Substitute Familiar, and I love doing this. I also have a comic I've been working on. I had an actual comic that's been kickstarted a while back. And I'm writing and illustrating, but also I'm doing streaming of video games. Like at least 3 mornings a week, I stream. I do a thing called Good Morning Mega Man, where I stream every single Mega Man game and fan game that exists. I am about 160 games in. I'm nowhere near done. But it's great because I grew up with bad games, so I'm just going to keep going. I also have a VTuber avatar, my robot daughter Zandrabot, who sometimes I stream in a fun little digital puppet show mm-hmm. to like, you know, stream some games. Streaming has been like super fun. I also do speedruns sometimes. It's great. It's a way to like get that like performance mm-hmm. energy out. And also I still make games every now and then. When it's a good time to go back to like big events and conventions, I will probably also be on panels and do talks and stuff, because sometimes I do talks about like productivity stuff mm-hmm. and how to get your project started or stuff like that. I just love talking, and I love like projecting a bunch of positive energy into the world in whatever form that takes.
Fantastic. Zandra, if people want to find you on the internet, where can they look?
If you want to find the last thing I'm working on, it's at zandra.gay. That leads you to the last thing I'm making. But if at any point you're like, I am Zandra Vandra on Twitch and on Twitter, that's where you can leisurely find me. Also, all my stream archives are on YouTube. I think it's youtube.com/Zandra Vandra. It should be the same. But if you want my books, if you want to read about shy nerds having transformative experiences and discovering more about themselves and most of the time turning into a cat girl in the process, that's at books.zandravandra.com, and you'll find all my stuff there.
books.zandravandra.com. So, which pitch deserves a place in the Word Crash Hall of Infamy? Was it Antihero 6 or Owl's Moving Castle? You tell us. Tweet us at Word Crash Game and vote for your favorite story of the night. If you're listening on YouTube, remember to like and subscribe and get in those comments to tell us how you would tackle our questions today. Everything we talked about will be in the links below. Thank you for listening. I'm Megan, and this has been Word Crash. Remind you to always get creative.